Well, hey there. Thank you for tuning in, folks. These are unprecedented times we find ourselves in. And we at Gibson are glad to provide an outlet for ESD for 2030 and help promote education for sustainable development. To learn more, check out gibson.org. That's G-P-S-E-N.org. And if you'd be so kind, subscribe to this here show and maybe tell a friend or two, too. It's another useful thing to add to our days while we ride out this wild isolation situation we find ourselves in. All right. Well, thank you again for tuning in. Let's get to today's show, shall we? From the magnificent Pacific Northwest, this is ESD Sustain Me. I'm Joe Colhane, and this here marks the very first episode of this brand spanking new podcast.
Boom, boom, darkness falls, headlights in the afternoon, sneak up from behind, don't stumble.
Well, all things considered, including the fact that this podcast is kicking off during a global pandemic, I am really glad to be here now, in this moment, connecting with you. Thank you for joining. As noted, this is ESD Sustain Me, a podcast based here in Portland, Oregon, through Gibson, which is the Greater Portland Sustainability Education Network. And it will be focusing locally, regionally, and worldwide on ESD for 2030. That is, Education for Sustainable Development, working on ways in this decade to right this ship that's gotten quite a wee bit off course. Before we get any further along in the program, though, I would like to acknowledge that this podcast is being recorded on the traditional village sites of the Multnomah, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Bands of the Chinook, Tualatin Kalapuya, Molalla, and many other tribes who made their homes along the Columbia River. Multnomah is a band of Chinooks that lived in this area. We thank the descendants of these tribes for being the original stewards and protectors of these lands since time immemorial. We also acknowledge that Portland, Oregon has the 9th largest urban Native American population in the U.S., with over 380 federally recognized tribes represented in the urban Portland metropolitan area. We also acknowledge the systemic policies of genocide, relocation, and assimilation that still impact many Indigenous Native American families today. We are honored by the collective work of many Native nations, leaders, and families who are demonstrating resilience, resistance, revitalization, healing, and creativity. We are honored to be guests upon these lands. Thank you. And thanks also to our colleagues at the Portland State University Indigenous Nation Studies Program for crafting this acknowledgement. So, here we are, 4.5 months into 2020, and boy, oh boy, do we find ourselves in a doozy of a pickle of a situation here. Now, depending on where you're listening to this from, you've likely been dealing with social distancing and an isolation situation now for several weeks or nearly 2 months or thereabouts. And while there is no clear timeline that I can see, it appears that we will be hunkering down for another month or so at minimum here in Portland, and maybe even longer. Over 2 million confirmed cases of COVID-19 have been registered across the globe, with over 150,000 deaths, and, 22 million folks filed for unemployment in just the past 4 weeks here in the U.S. Everything save for essential work and services have closed up shop, and it is still to be determined what things will look like on the other side of this pandemic. This is unprecedented territory we find ourselves in with this crisis. And meanwhile, the climate crisis continues to unfold right alongside this pandemic. Incidentally, the results from everyone sheltering in place, social distancing, and under various forms of quarantine has resulted in a tremendous reduction in pollution so far, which is at least something good that has come from this. It will be temporary, though, if we do not change our ways, transition our stories and mythologies towards ecologically mindful, environmentally sustainable, and racially and socially just and truly equitable narratives. And that is partly where ESD for 2030 comes in, a framework developed by minds from across the world in collaboration with UNESCO. UNESCO is the United Nations Education, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, and this is also in tandem with the SDGs, those being the Sustainable Development Goals, of which there are 17. I'll get into all this more in future episodes, and indeed, I look forward to learning more as we go along, speaking with folks from all sectors of this incredible world who are doing things that are educational in nature that will help us, individually and collectively, to learn how to better navigate our way into a future that could be key to the very survival of our species, along with so many others on this planet. And it does go beyond just higher education, which again I'll touch on in future episodes. For now though, I am delighted that our first guest is able to, you know, take the time out of his relatively busy schedule right now and speak with me. He's a local leader, and we actually have connected in the past at Portland Community College when I was there. Mac Perotisano is a second-generation American Samoan, and he is the Sylvania Campus Multicultural Center coordinator. Also, he is an elder council member of Pacific Climate Warriors and 350 Pacific. On top of that, he also has a hand in several other organizations I learned about as well. Mac was going to be the keynote speaker for the Gypsum 2020 Sustainability Symposium, which had been slated for this very day, April 17th, as a matter of fact. That was, of course, pre-pandemic, before the shutters of society were effectively closed. You remember back then? Ah, the memories. Well, we have moved the symposium into the virtual realm, but will no longer have the capacity for what was likely going to be a fantastic keynote address by Mac. Again, though, I was thankful to be able to sit with him and chat and have a bit of a check-in, too, to see what he is up to these days under vastly different circumstances than he was just a month ago or so. I mean, we all were under such different circumstances. All right, enough of this. I'm going to go ahead and jump into the conversation, and we'll get right to it here. Just checking in before we get too far into it. We're in pandemic, man. I feel like it literally has shifted everything for me as far as even the call to action that the Gypsum Symposium was, what a call to action even is right now. You know what I mean? It's like, what can you do besides be in survival mode and make sure you're giving yourself self-care and things like that? And I guess I wanted to kind of start there. Like, how are you holding up a month into this?
So I'm a social butterfly. I like to get out. I mean, as soon as I'm done at work, which is very sociable in its own right, running the center, I'm off doing work with the orgs. And so, you know, whether that's hopping online late at night to connect with the rest of the 350 Pacific team, organizing with our PDX 350 Pacific Climate Warrior team. I'm also with the Samoan Pacific Community Development. And then I just jumped on as a MRG Foundation grant writer. So I've always kept busy. And this has really halted a lot of that. And so my busy is like here in my room, and I literally took the bed out of my room, and this is now my office. And so I try to make my office as livable as possible. I work from that end of the room, where I come to this end of the room. Whatever I can do to get moving in my house, I've been having to do that. But like, I'm home alone. So there's a lot of uncertainty there. My daughter's back in the Marshall Islands with her mom, and they don't have any COVID cases, and they want to keep it that way. So their borders are closed. All flights are grounded, and there's just like she's supposed to be here next month, and I don't know if I'll see her this year or not. And priorities are safety, and at the same time, it's like, what does it mean when a kid can't see their parent and the parent can't see their kid? So this becomes a little bit rough. And in terms of, yes, is we had a lot of things planned, and I'm just hoping that COVID-19 had kind of opened the curtain and the floodgates of everything that's already existed before. And this kind of action and this swift response to COVID-19 to me is a blueprint for what needs to happen in our climate work. And so we're learning a lot of what it means to really, commit all your resources to combat something as big as COVID-19. And I think, I saw this funny meme that whoever COVID-19's PR person was, climate change needs that person. We need that same PR person.
I saw that.
It's just educating and advocating for, or really just working people into a place where they can now see that, look, this climate change is just a daily and it's just around the corner too. We can't sleep on this.
Yeah, I hear that. And now more than ever, I suppose we have an opportunity. The part I guess I'm really caught up on, especially from the position I'm in, where I have a house and a lot of privilege. I mean, I got food on the table, a lot of security, and you're working with a lot of marginalized, oppressed people. How do you feel? And it sounds like you're engaged in many different communities. What is it looking like as far as what that means? It sounds like there's plenty of engagement, but beyond survival, I'm just so curious as to like what that's looking like right now.
Yeah, so you talked about like we're a month in, and like a week or two ago, I think those who are used to working in crisis and folks who do a lot of organizing, I generally felt from the folks that are in my circles that like we need to be in for the long haul, and for a lot of our community who don't have resources to information or best practices in getting that information, that we're now starting to see a month in that resources are running dry. And I feel thankful for being at MRG and being in some of these orgs I'm a part of, because there's been a lot of support to give money to organizations that are supporting communities this way. There's an organization, Utopia, United Territories of Pacific Islander. It's a queer trans Pacific Islander group, and they put in money to get to provide relief for folks. And, they were handing out like $100, $200 gift certificates to queer trans Pacific Islander communities and families to get through like some of the everyday bump and grind that folks have to do, and people are really hustling. My students right now are like, week one of the term, which is just we're at week three right now. Week one, we're like, look, there's these emergency grants. They're grants. They're free money. Ask for it now. Like PCC is giving out $300,000 in this Overcoming Barriers grant through the foundation. Y'all need to jump on this. And it's not till this week three, and who knows how much money's left, that they're like, yeah, I didn't think it was going to cost me this much. And so the urgency is now hitting a lot of our folks who need it most, and students who aren't working, who had jobs, situations where we have to live on the internet now if they want to receive. I mean, I just think about Portland Public Schools and what they have to go through. And they're talking about giving out thousands of laptops, and it's still not enough. We see drive-through handouts of curriculum, and parents who, aren't qualified to teach in the classroom are now being stuck with curriculum without any help. And so it's all over. And you just, that's just here in the Portland area that I know of. If you're going back to these islands, like they have the fear of COVID-19, you got climate change is happening, and then tropical storm sweeps through, and it's like, it's just never ending. And those folks are really resilient. I mean, as soon as those things happen and, you know, communications are back online, they're like, all right, we're reaching out to our people. It's time to mobilize. We need help on the ground. Here are our teams. Go get some money and bring it back. And we'll reconvene the climate work.
That's good. I mean, it's so unreal. I mean, it's just nuts. It was Tropical Cyclone Harold, right? That just came and rocked through, which is, I don't know. I find that such an odd name to call a Cyclone Harold. But anyways, that to compound a pandemic with, yeah, these natural disasters that are like happening all over, the fires, the tornadoes, it's kind of like a dream, a nightmare. I mean, but there's hope, right? I mean, I don't know if hope's the right word. I just feel like now people are stepping up and getting really resilient and clever. Is there any really cool or inspiring innovative movements that have happened in this last month that you're like, oh damn, like this is, that's cool. Like you guys are doing some clever stuff now to like get around not being able to meet in person or anything cool like that.
Yeah. I mean, the Pacific is one of the hardest regions to connect in the first place. Mm. And so this idea of being able to connect is not a reality for everyone out there. I mean, you have islands that are like a collection of atolls hundreds of miles away from each other. Mm. And if you're not on the main island or the main atoll, you don't have internet connection. And that's the way it works. And so connecting with our general Pacific team, I think folks have become used to resiliency, and that can be very taxing in some sorts. But I mean, the mantra of 350 Pacific and the Pacific Climate Wars is that we're not drowning, we are fighting. And I think a lot of people look at the Pacific and the narrative, and why that narrative is so important, that we are not drowning, we're fighting, is that for a long time, other people were telling that story of us, that, yeah, how are you doing this? Oh, poor Pacific. And we're like, no, we're in this fight, and we've been in this fight. So we have a lot to offer. We've been offering a lot. I mean, you think about the key players with the Paris Climate Accords. I mean, those were, you know, strong Pacific Islander leaders who led that charge. And then you know, COP23 and having Fiji as the presidency for that conference of parties on climate change. That was huge for us. And we mobilized around that too, and to push and keep and maintain some of the demands that we need as the most vulnerable and invisible communities out there. So in terms of like, yeah, Hurricane Tropical Storm Harold is running through. That's a new normal in the Pacific. That's something that's dealing with, you know, we're having to deal with on top of climate. And that's part of the climate change battle. And again, we just go back for resilient folks, and, you know, the storm has recited, and here we are. We're right back to the grind of things, practicing social distancing. Some old countries distancing themselves from everyone else, and we're back to it. So to answer the question and get to the next part of like what we're doing, you know, 350 is sort of like in a pause right now, the global team. And so we're trying to figure out ways that like, how do we, and I think we're burnt out. I'm going to be real. I was a bit burnt out. I'm kind of glad that there's this pause. I think everyone in that organization, whether you're a full-time staff member or a volunteer, one of the, you know, the regional teams, it's just been go, 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 go. And now we get some time to focus on ourselves. So we've been doing something called Talanoa Fridays, which is Thursday here because they're a day ahead. And it's just been around like, here are some cool ways that when we relaunch or we kick back into action, that we're going to follow these plans. And here's some resources for a lot of our Islander communities that are out there that they can pull from. And then here's just some space to exist. And there's many ways that we do that in the Pacific. I think this Talanoa Friday is based around prayer. You know, the church, specifically the Christian church has had a huge influence in the Pacific, and people lean on prayer. And I think when we go out and we engage our communities, like, we have to meet them where they're at. And standing over here and, you know, whatever your religious beliefs are, like, and we're just like, you can't do that. You know, there's this issue of Christians and their lack of involvement in the movement, or whatever, like, beef you might have with the church. We need those folks too. I mean, they occupy a huge space in our politics, in our community. So we got to go there, and there's going to be other places we're going to have to hit up too. But I really appreciate that part, that we're willing to dive into all these different community stakeholders in order to mobilize the rest of our community.
Cool. I hear that. It's putting into practice inclusivity, right? I mean, the real thing, you got to open it up to everybody, because we're all in this together. Like, that's just undeniable. That's cool. You know, I appreciate hearing that, and I also wish to help broadcast the work. What you're sharing, what you're talking about are good things to recommend for people in Portland and anywhere, because even if you're on an island or wherever, especially since the lockdown is worldwide, we may as well be anywhere in the world, literally. So we could practice the best practices of whoever's doing it, not best necessarily, but I guess, I don't know, you know, I keep coming back to how the sustainability movement has been largely, at least in the US, driven by white folks, privileged folks, and capitalism's green buying, buy your way through it, things of that nature. When, as you've mentioned, the resilience of people who have been fighting this whole time, not drowning, but fighting and coming up with clever ways, is now something everybody needs to take a page out of that playbook, right? Humble down and listen more than try and figure out, academically speaking or otherwise, how to figure this stuff out, and actually just listen for a minute. So I thank you again for just sharing this, and I'll look for some of the links and maybe some resources you can share that we can, you know, send out through Gypsum and stuff, because it's important, you know. And I don't know, I'm just, it's so hard just being at home all this time and wanting to be engaged, wanting to act, but I have a 4-year-old. I also have a kid with my ex-wife. She has been staying at her mom's house this whole time, navigating the Portland public school difficulties of that system. And it's just like, wow, just to even imagine having, like you said, unqualified people. She actually had a degree in education, but unqualified parents trying to navigate how to teach people right now, when I think some of it, we do need to just chill out a little bit too. And
I could backtrack on the unqualified part, because, like,
oh, well, not unqualified,
I mean, I said it too. I mean,
yeah.
What I mean is, just to clarify for people who might be listening, that, like,
yeah,
the own standards that we have for people to have in the classroom, training and a degree, it's not that we can't be successful or adapt. It's just another taxing thing, because we didn't plan that career. And I didn't mean that you were referring to that either.
I hear you, and I thank you for that clarification for for all listeners, because I totally get it. But, like, we're cooking, we're cleaning, we're doing all this, and then we also have to try and stay on top of the kids falling through school. And I can tell you right now, we're not having success very much, and I know that's a story a lot of people are going through. And just even the, like, you got to stay on the track with school, you know, that's a lot of stress that is on top of this very real survival mode, on top of our normal survival mode of life. Just to take it easy on ourselves, I guess, is the big takeaway I'm getting to, right? I have all these goals and ambitions, and even doing this podcast, I'm stoked to be able to do it, but finding the motivation to, like, do anything right now is tough.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still in the hoodie that I woke up in this morning. Like, it's the motivation part is definitely something. I have to be on my computer to meet with my students, and so that kind of forces me to get on. But there's a lot of self-care that I'm needing to do, and we've been in, it's been go. Like, usually spring break is a time for us to get some, R&R, and that wasn't the case. And we were going working weekends, and you know, I had extra like flex hours, like time that I worked overtime that I need to make up. And it was just like, you don't have that time to make it up. And working with my staff, it was just like, look, I understand everyone's had that. If we can get through these first couple of weeks and see a break, everyone's taking a break. I don't care what meeting's happening next week, Friday. We need to breathe and find our time because we're still working weekends and it's week three. And you know, we won't be compensated as salary folks. I hope my classified staff person claims all the hours they work because they deserve it. And again, you know, HR practices kind of bind us sometimes. And you know, we're all trying to do our part as a team, and we need to be properly compensated. So I'm just hoping that, you know, they give us all summer off or something like that. You know, I just pay me for all this time and all this suffering during the summer, and we'll call it even.
That sounds like a reasonable ask right there. I mean, shoot, everyone needs a breather. I mean, who knows what it's going to look like in the summer, you know? It's like when the lacks of these distancing isolation situations will actually even occur is still so unclear that it's unsettling, and it just feels like this super ripe opportunity to really like look at all the systems that we have in place and try and like undo a lot of them or scrap them and restart as much as that's possible at any time. But from that perspective, is there anything like that you're most excited to work towards or motivated to see as the opportunity that like systemically one of the groups you're a part of or you know, something that your students are really jazzed about right now or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, just being in education for specifically, I mean, all the inequities are being highlighted. Like, I'm teaching a social justice class with Dr. Clifford C. Meeks, co-teaching a section for surveillance students. And, you know, there's something called a direct action plan where our students are having to tackle some work. And, you know, just something we're sharing is that, like, yeah, COVID-19 is very present, it's in our face, but COVID-19 isn't a systemic issue, right? But it's revealing, you know, all these inequities that, and it's testing how equitable were our services in the get-go. So it's allowing us to reflect back and like, oh, I guess even in the multicultural center, we didn't have the most equitable practice, right? And the lucky thing for us is like we knew that we had a large online community and that our services weren't reaching them at all because we didn't have programs catered to this community. Like, and you know, that's the good thing. I'm gonna have these podcast equipment because we were like, we gotta find a way to reach our students. And luckily, that blueprint we had created just the year before, so that this year when everything shut down, everyone was like, I don't know what to do for a program. We were like, whew. Because we had thought about a community we weren't thinking about before, and it just happened to have the needs of these like technological needs. You know, we're able to, you know, start next week to have all these programs that are going to come out because we were sharing the blueprint with our student advocates, and they're the ones who are producing these programs. And so that's
Awesome.
pretty cool. But then here comes the other part. We're losing a bunch of students because they don't have laptops, and internet's not affordable. And, you know, despite all these emergency grants that are coming out, you know, on top of students losing their jobs, it's like we have to rethink around which services, you know, should be a public right. And I think we're really having to rethink educational resources, and that can include internet and access to a computer. And, you know, I just, bunch of radical thoughts in my head. I'm just like, if a student comes to PCC, they should get a laptop. And
Absolutely.
internet shouldn't cost, especially in like, you know, I live in St. John's. I'm like right across the street from the Villa. Like these things, this is a community that can't afford a lot of the services to function online, work from home, and we're asking them to do that. So I just think COVID-19 is really shown our education system. And now look at PPS again. That's like another you know, I feel I have a lot of friends in that realm, both as administrators, programs, and instructors, and they're struggling right now. And, you know, the education system, especially with the person who's, you know, in the Department of Education right now, and their campaign to ruin public education, it's just like, now you see more than ever why they can't defund over and over more money to our public school system.
Right. Huh. Yeah, I guess that, man, we knew these things existed before, but like you said, you know, this pandemic's really just putting the mirror right up to the face of our social structures, and the inequities that you just described are real and have been real. Mm-hmm. You know, going to PCC and going to classes with students I knew who were living in their cars, and you know, I helped run the food bank, and just watching how important that was to people just to have that lifeline. And these are the basic needs that aren't being met. And I guess, as they said, it's like, it's not radical, but it's amazing that it is radical that, like, now we have this opportunity maybe to really be like, we need these basic services just as a way of life. We need access to the internet, access to healthcare and food. And I don't know if our systems under this weird democracy we have right now are capable of doing it, but I do see that.
Oh, they're capable. They've shown it already.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
They've shown it already that they can create a bill that can go to everyday people and supply everyday services. And, you know, I hope it wakes people up. It demystified this idea that if you give money to everyday people, hardworking blue collar folks, that it won't crash the economic system. You know, this is the time and the example. It's just crazy that people who've talked about so much, a party that talked about so much about socialism and democratic socialism not being a thing, are like throwing money at people. You damn right I took my money.
Oh shoot. Yeah, I know, right? It's like, yeah, we gotta take every scrap we can get to help keep it going, or us going. Man, well, I thank you so much for taking this time. You know, you already helped do an interview written before, but I kind of wanted to just ask again as far as Portlanders specifically, but, you know, everybody, any suggestions about what actions specifically to take or places to go to that you think are the most important or helpful right now for just an everyday person wondering what to do with some of their time while they're in isolation, where to go or what to do?
Yeah, I mean, beyond the everyday individual actions that we take, you know, whether, you know, riding our bikes collectively, well, actually, let's say riding our bikes, taking public transportation, you know, growing our food in our gardens. You know, I think individually those things don't have a lot of power until they're grouped with people and organizations, right? Like organizing. I wrote an interview that, like, you know, I didn't know the interview was up, and I didn't know that I still got that award. And someone hit me up on the side, like, hey, man, congratulations. You dug in the skull part that you mentioned. And I was just like, I don't even remember what I said. I gave that interview like a month and some change ago, and I, you know, when the symposium was canceled, it just totally, you know, left my mind. So I went back and was like, oh yeah, I mean, so to this point, that I just think folks have to use whatever these movements are, like it should be connected to an organization or a movement or some kind of campaign, that it's not enough to just do it on your own, but to mobilize people to jump on board. And so there are some bigger, I mean, we know there's fossil fuels is a huge thing right now. And it's probably the hugest thing in terms of what's happening on Earth. And I think divestment movements are really important right now. And then the depths of divestment movement, right? So it's not just the investment of fossil fuels. It's like the, you know, there's pockets that live within them that also need to be, you know, pulled out. And so their investments and divestments, and I'm forgetting some of the terminology that exists there, Those are the commitments we need from our large institutions. I've been working with some folks from Divest Ed this past year. One of our students at PCC is going to be an intern with that organization, and going to be able to empower like our Pacific Climate Warrior team locally here of what we need to do to mobilize our team, our Pacific Islander Student Alliance team, to go to school and ask them and be, you know, in a community who's in the front line leading one of these movements. I know that other groups are doing this. Divest Ed has, you know, moved into some of these college campuses, and we hope in best practices that when you, this is advice for folks out there, that when you see a frontline community jumping in and really fix your terminology of what frontline means, maybe get that definition from, you know, like indigenous people of color groups and take it from there. But, you know, it's got to be something bigger than the ban of plastic straws. They're drinking, they have, you know, you have paper straws and plastic cups. Like, it's that whole thing needs to go in general. But it's just, that's what that was the thing I was getting to today. It's just not going to be that. You can't just stop taking your car to work on your own. It's getting your neighbor to do the same thing as well. Investing in a hybrid or a more, maybe an electric car. Like, I got a hybrid car because we were like, I think people are going to look at us as sustainability folks. Me and Kathy, when we first moved here to Portland, and be like, y'all driving that car? And like, you know, I still took the bus to work most days. And if there was a plug-in in our house to get an electric car and we could afford it, you know, I would do that. Maybe that's what they need to do when you win this award. They give you the down payment. One of those electric vehicles, you get a Tesla and see how that works. But anyway, I digress. Yeah, just that's my hint for folks. I think there's a lot of cool organizations that are doing that. I know there was this move for a carbon cap. I remember hearing that and thinking like, that's not enough. And I'm glad that folks thought that wasn't enough. And you know, organizations like 350 PDX, like Opal, like some of our larger teams out in the Pacific, they just know like it's got to be all in or nothing. And that's what I would encourage folks to do, is just look for those organizations, help spread that word, do it responsibly so that folks can get the credit that they deserve, and just be a part of a team. No movement's about one person. And I think, yeah, folks can really learn. If folks can learn how to do that in a healthy way and think about the community over the individual, or put the movement first before ourselves, there's a lot of best practices for how that happens.
Right on. I appreciate those words. I won't keep you too much longer. I'm curious though, just on a personal level, like what are you doing to like relax? You know, what's the good link or you know, way to chill out? And
I mean, the sun's out and I have a backyard, so I'm very lucky. As soon as this is over, you know, I'm gonna lay out there, listen to some music or call some friends and check in. If you can, my advice to folks is like, you gotta fix your house to be livable, a working space. I said I'm lonely and by myself, but there's some advantages to that, and it's that like I don't have to share my working space with other folks. I know some people, they have a house full of people, and finding a quiet place to do that is kind of tough. And I think the warm weather allows us to work outside a little bit and create some of that space that folks need from each other. I started playing video games again, and you know, there's something about losing to a little kid online that really just hurts my soul. And I don't know where these little kids learn to talk all that trash, but they're really good at it. And I was like, okay, I'm about to cry. I'm gonna get off. I'm like, see me on the real court if we have the social distance or something like that. And cooking. cooking's been the other one. I've had a lot of time to do a lot of meal and food prep. And so, you know, I would usually rush home so I can cook for me and my daughter after work. And now that I have some time to like put some, you know, time into my cooking, I haven't ate this well in a long time. So that's another place I'm learning to put my time and effort to.
Right on. That's fun. I've been doing the same, trying to figure out fermenting, you know, doing some sauerkraut and like, yeah, that one's been rewarding. Cause you know, you had to wait 2 weeks minimum and all of a sudden we got 2 weeks on our hands. So you just, you know, you get to apprise a couple of weeks later in your own house, which is pretty cool.
I got one more. I did invest in a cocktail kit. I had one already, but it didn't come with a muddler. So I bought another one and I'm just going to be practicing my bartending skills. We'll see if people might need a bartender when we're done social distancing. I don't know.
Oh, mixologists are always, always valuable. Always. Oh, man. Well, thank you, Mac. I really appreciate it. And I want you to get out in that sunshine while it's out there and just keep doing what you're doing, man. It's greatly, greatly appreciated. And I'm sorry I didn't get to witness you in person giving a keynote at the symposium that is tomorrow now online. You know, it's like a virtual symposium, which will be what it'll be. But, you know, seeing you up on stage commanding the room would have been a fun sight to behold. So I'm a little bummed about that. But there's always the future. Let us look brightly towards it and that chance to happen. Maybe when we have the coffers to give you that down payment on that Tesla you wanted to. All right. Oh, shoot. Well, thank you so much, Mac. Have a good day, man.
Yeah. And stay safe, you and your family. I'm wishing the best for you and look forward to the podcast.
Thank you, man. Love to you, man.
All right, brother.
Well, I am delighted you've tuned in, folks. Thank you so much. And mighty big thanks to Mac Porotisano for being the first guest on the podcast. And please do check out the MRG Foundation, 350 Pacific and 350.org as well. Also, the Pacific Climate Warriors and Utopia, that is the United Territories of Pacific Islanders Alliance, as well as Divest Ed. Many resources that Mac shared are very helpful, and I will share some links to those that you can check out. I do have to say, it's been a while since I was at the helm of one of these shows, and it feels good to be back. And let us do the best we can right now to take care of ourselves during this global pandemic, along with the environmental climate crisis we also face. The podcast intro and outro music were by my darling wife, Rachel Robinson, and this episode was recorded, edited, and produced by me, Joe Colhane. It is supported by Gibson and inspired by the work of UNESCO through ESD for 2030 and the SDGs as well. Today, we'll be having our Gibson's 2020 Virtual Sustainability Symposium, and I imagine I'll be reflecting on that in the coming episode. I thank you again for tuning in. It is so greatly appreciated. And I certainly realize it can be challenging to be optimistic at this time, to keep on keeping on. But you know what really helps? Deep breathing, practicing an attitude of gratitude for all that you have, and then, of course, loving them all. Every last one you meet. Forgive us all.